on to the next case. United States versus Bowers. Mr. Kent Anderson.
Yes, Your Honor, thank you. May it please the Court, I am Kent Anderson with the Federal Public Defender's Office of the Central District of Illinois, representing the appellant Peter Bowers. In this case, Mr. Bowers pled guilty to possession with intent to distribute 5.622 grams of cocaine. His sentence was increased by 14 levels based on relevant conduct of other sales of cocaine. 755 grams of that was based on unreliable evidence of amounts that he allegedly sold to Mary Berg and Andrew and Steve Lee. The district court found that Mr. Bowers sold 500 grams to Mary Berg. However, it didn't give her testimony the special scrutiny that is required for an addict witness who gives inconsistent statements. Both at the time of the grand jury, of her grand jury testimony and when she testified at sentencing, Berg was taking medication for bipolar disorder, which she stated affected her memory so badly that she couldn't even remember what happened last week sometimes. And in addition to that, during the years that she bought cocaine from Mr. Bowers, she was drinking and using cocaine heavily. She stated that this also affected her memory. And in fact, she could not even remember where she worked between 1993 and 97, or when she stopped using cocaine, which for most people who use that heavily is a pretty important date. Yet the district court didn't even address these problems. And much of Berg's testimony was also internally contradictory, which this court has found to be perhaps the prototype of unreliable evidence.
Mr. Anderson, it seems to me that you claim, you know, in the brief that you weren't asking us to reevaluate Ms. Berg's credibility. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. I'm saying that the district court did not consider the proper factors to be able to evaluate it in the first instance.
But isn't her credibility the sole basis for your challenge?
In the sense that her testimony was inconsistent. However, if the district court had explained which statements it was crediting and why it was crediting those statements, most likely that explanation would not be clearly erroneous. In this case, it didn't do that, and that's why the finding is unreliable. Before the grand jury, Berg stated that she bought from 93 to 97 from Mr. Bowers. However, at sentencing, she said she started buying in 95 or 96. Either way, she said she bought from him about 100 times. But this court hasn't been willing in the past to find that different changing time periods have no effect on the number of purchases. In addition, she also said that she bought from 3 to 7 grams at a time from him, which testified before the grand jury. However, at sentencing, she said she bought from 1 to 5 grams at a time. And then upon specifically questioned by the prosecutor, said possibly 7 grams on occasion. But the court never mentioned any of these inconsistencies, even though it was required, as I said, to address the inconsistencies and explain why it found one statement more credible than another. In addition, there was no evidence of the average amount per purchase. And the court found 5 grams on average, but it didn't say how it came up with that figure, although this court requires courts to explain their findings in such regard. When choosing between equally plausible estimates, courts are required to err on the side of caution. In this case, the district court didn't do that. If it had, it would have at most found Mr. Bowers liable for 100 grams sold to Berg based on the 100 purchases, assuming that was reliable, and the minimum 1 gram per purchase, since we really don't know anything else, versus the 500 grams that the court actually found. Instead, the court's ruling looks like the nebulous eyeballing that this court's condemned in U.S. v. Stott and Henderson, and therefore is clearly erroneous and unreliable. In addition to Berg, the amount attributed based on sales to Berg, the pre-sentence report stated that Mr. Bowers sold 1,255 grams to both Nander and Steve Lee. The court, rather than accepting that figure, which was based on Nander Lee's grand jury testimony and police statements, slashed 1,000 grams off of it, which was about 80%, but didn't explain why her testimony was 20% reliable but 80% unreliable, which is very similar to this court's case in United States v. Henderson, which the court found was looked like unsupported conjecture when the district court found the witness's testimony to be 10% reliable but 90% unreliable. And there's no explanation why that figures were correct rather than some other equally plausible or implausible figure.
It took 1,000 grams off, and you're complaining, huh?
Because together with these two amounts do make a difference. I certainly wouldn't be complaining if the 1,000 grams had been enough to benefit Mr. Bowers or if it hadn't made a difference. But 500 plus 255 deep,
The district court noted that it didn't need to consider any of the drug sales to the lees in order to each to reach the 500 grams.
That's because of the 500 grams that it found based on Berg. I'm arguing both because both of them have to be either drastically reduced or eliminated in order to get Mr. Bowers below the 500 gram threshold, which would make a difference to his sentence.
But if we disagree with your attack on Ms. Berg's credibility, wouldn't you agree that the challenge regarding the lees is moot?
That is correct.
Right.
But in this case, the unreliable amount did increase the low end of Mr. Bowers' guideline range by anywhere from 19 to 56 months, depending on whether the court may have found the lowest possible level 18 plus the 2 for obstruction of justice, or level 24 plus 2 versus the level 26 plus 2 that it actually found. Therefore, this case must be remanded for resentencing based on reliable evidence. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. And we have Mr. Robert Anderson.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Robert Anderson. I'm an assistant United States attorney for the Western District of Wisconsin. I do have the privilege of representing the United States in this matter. No relation to the other Mr. Anderson, in case there's any confusion. The obvious issue here is, did the court clearly err in relying on and crediting the testimony and evidence before it at the sentencing, which determined that Bowers dealt in over 500 grams of cocaine? And I would note that that is a mere one-fourth, that threshold is a mere one-fourth of the original threshold in the pre-sentence investigation, which determined that he was over 2,000 grams of cocaine, dealt in over 2,000 grams of cocaine. And we must not forget, in any error analysis made here, the second part of the error analysis was it a harmless error? That's going to be especially interesting when we get to Mandra Lee's testimony. To cut to the bottom line, of course, there are only two real relevant witnesses that we need to consider here that really matter, Ms. Berg and Ms. Lee, because either one of them, independently or both together, put him in that same range either way.
But Judge Crabb didn't give very detailed findings with respect to the credibility of Berg. The only thing she said was that she observed that she was extraordinarily reluctant about her testimony and tried to avoid giving direct answers. Did she make any other comments about the credibility of Berg?
Not in the transcript, and your observation is correct, but the question really is, was it necessary for her to make more findings? Does this really fall under the Beeler line of cases, or does this fall under those cases where this court has distinguished cases from Beeler? And that is where the important distinction lies. This is a case unlike Beeler. He really is arguing that this court should reassess the credibility determination of the court, which this court, as long settled law, has said is not the proper task of this court. Judge Crabb made a determination regarding the credibility of Ms. Berg. She determined that it was obvious that Ms. Berg was being evasive in her answers and avoiding answering questions. She was, as you noted, Judge Williams, extremely reluctant to testify. And she then, in the next sentence, went on to say that she, at the same time, observed that Berg, when confronted with her grand jury testimony, reaffirmed or established that the testimony from the grand jury was truthful on her part. That constituted a finding that Ms. Berg was not genuinely suffering from memory loss, but she was engaging in evasiveness, just as she had planned. Because when she talked to the defense investigator before the sentencing, she asked the defense, Mr. Bauer's own defense investigator, what he thought would happen if she tried to claim, when the government questioned her, that she just couldn't remember things. Nonetheless, why this is different than the Beeler case is because we simply, the Beeler case applies if you have a witness who does suffer from drug addiction, alcohol addiction, other various problems that it noted there, but in which there are inconsistencies in the testimony. Here, we do not have that fact situation happening. There are not inconsistencies in the testimony. The judge had the grand jury transcript as the government exhibit before her, and I would suggest that each of you do this to get a sense of where what Judge Crabb was really seeing. Read the grand jury transcript of Mary Berg Bollum, and then pick up and read her sentencing, the testimony at sentencing, and you will see that evasiveness. But Judge Crabb, of course, had an even better opportunity to view Ms. Berg on the stand and make those determinations that even in her demeanor she was being evasive. This is not a case of inconsistent testimony. This is a case of evasiveness, and that is what Judge Crabb found. That's why this doesn't fall under Beeler, but it falls under those cases that are distinguished from Beeler. That's why the attack based on Beeler is flawed, because it's a misapplication of that authority. We have a witness, Ms. Berg, who testified before the grand jury with no trouble at all, no trouble recalling events, no trouble even correcting my misstatements of fact in the questions to her, or adding additional facts in my questions to her. Unlike what the other Mr. Anderson had indicated, that she was under this, the cloud of the mental illness and drug addiction, alcohol abuse during her grand jury testimony. If that were the case, when you read her grand jury testimony, why didn't she have a lack of recollection at that time, too? She had very clear and cogent answers to the questions that were placed to her.
Can you speak to your second point, that if it was error, it was harmless, because you don't have much time left?
Right. Especially in regard to the Nandra Lee instance, the judge just wholesale cut off 1,000 grams. He even almost concedes in his brief that the government may be well correct that it was a reasonable basis for the judge to find 1,255 grams, but then he says in the next sentence, but that's not reasonable then to find 255 grams. If the court could find 1,255 grams, it is even more reasonable, and without doubt that amount is at least 255 grams. And the strange thing is that I'm here as a prosecutor arguing that the judge was all right. I'm arguing against their argument that the judge gave him too much of a cut, too much benefit. I'm defending an added benefit to a defendant. Even if it's true, even if she erred in wholesale cutting off 1,000 grams, where's the harm? This is the exact definition of harmless error. It's even better than that. It's a beneficial error to the defendant. And the same thing with respect to this. This appeal should not be a forum for re-arguing and seeking a de novo examination of credibility determinations. The district court made those findings. This is not like Beeler. This is distinguishable from Beeler. And I ask this court, if there are no other questions, to please affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Anything further? You have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
First, I would point out that all of the cases that distinguished Beeler did not involve inconsistent statements by the same witness. This did. The court did not find evasiveness. It may have been thinking that, I don't know, but it didn't make such a finding. And in order to find that Berg lied about her memory problems, the district court, credit her testimony, in any case, the district court would have had to find that she lied about her memory problems, and the court did not make such a finding. Then the court would have had to explain why it was accepting her grand jury testimony, which wasn't subject to cross-examination, versus her sentencing testimony, which was. There may have been a basis for doing so, I don't know, but an explanation was necessary. And when Berg was asked what would happen if she told the prosecutor she couldn't remember things, fact is, we don't know. She may have just been asking, would she get in trouble for telling the truth about her lack of memory now? There wasn't much of an indication of concern for Mr. Bowers when his investigator called her back a second time and she refused to speak to him. And she didn't say that her grand jury testimony was truthful, only that she probably was asked the questions and gave the answers that were indicated on the transcript. She said she didn't remember it. Her memory problems actually only came out on cross-examination, which was the first time she was ever asked about them. And with respect to Nandra Lee, the fact is the court didn't find 1,255 grams. Perhaps it could have, but it didn't. And there was no benefit by the reduction in this case because it didn't make any difference to Mr. Bowers' sentence, which slashed off 1,000 grams. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thanks. Case will be taken under advisement.